Tim Ford, welcome. How is everybody?
What's up, Ken?
All right. My name's Ken. I'm an addict.
Hey, Ken.
24-karat addict. Won't put anything down until it kicks my ass. Whether it's dope, sex, money, power, it don't matter. So, welcome to the CA conference meeting leader workshop. Okay? My first question is, we better invite God into the room.
Yes.
And I would like to do that with the Serenity Prayer, with a moment of silence for the addict that suffers in and out of the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous. So I'm going to ask that you take a moment of silence, and we'll start with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will be done. Okay, thank you. Okay, well, I don't know what you're expecting in a meeting leaders workshop, but first thing is, put up your cell phone, okay? You have no need for your cell phone during this meeting. If it can't wait, put it on silent or pleasure mode, however you like it. And please don't disrupt the meeting. I ask that you have your coffee and bathroom. We'll do a bathroom break. The meeting was going to last until we cover the information that you're going to give for this workshop. This isn't a meeting leader teaching. It's not a meeting leader speaking meeting. This is participation. Okay, how many in the room? We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. We got 20 people in here. That's pretty good. That's about what I expected. And that way, how many in here leads meetings? Good. Okay. How many in here want to lead a meeting? Okay. All right. Okay. So the people that are leading the meetings don't want to lead the meetings. That's what I just got, okay? All right, let's try this again. How many people in here lead meetings? How many people in here want to lead a meeting? That's everybody, right? Or you wouldn't be here, okay? All right, that's a trick question. I'm sorry. All right. Everybody's got a piece of paper and a pen, right?
We need one right here.
You need one? I got a piece of paper.
I got an extra pen.
And a pen. And here's a pen, and I'm going to ask, I am the moderator, I'm not the teacher, and I think this lady right here probably, what's your name?
Me?
Tina. Tina has some skills, I can tell, and Tina will take notes on each question that we do, and then we will turn those answers, can you do that?
Sure.
We will turn those answers into the conference, so the conference can keep those in their archives. The questions and the answers, okay? And the easy way to do this is I'm going to go over a few things. I get to have my phone because that's what all my notes are on, if I can find them. And let's see here. Found them. Okay, so some questions that come up during these meeting leader workshops, of course, are, and you know, you can jot this down if it's a question that you want us to talk about, because this is participation meetings. You see this chair over here and the chair behind it. We'll take the person that's going to share on that, and I hope everybody shares a little bit. I hope everybody's involved in this because it's participation. And if you want to get up and share your thoughts on that question,
And Tina will log those in just a bullet form, and then we'll turn those into the conference. Everybody understand how this works? Okay, all right, okay. Some of the questions that come up during the workshops are the cleanliness of the meeting. How do we maintain that? That's such as, is the coffee made? You know, is there hand towels in the bathroom, tissue in the bathroom? What is the meeting leader's expectations? Some of the things that we discuss in these formats are choosing a speaker for a speaker meeting. What do we do about low attendance meetings in our home groups? Everybody has a home group? Okay. How do we introduce a speaker? That's a pretty common question. The big question of the day and the most important, I think, is choosing a topic for your meeting. Another one is control of the meeting. I come in here and just took control, didn't I? Nobody's sitting where they wanted to sit. Nobody gets to isolate. Everybody's up front and up close, which is, I wish it would happen at every meeting because the people being together is community, right? Yes. The closer we are together, the closer we are to community, okay? So, that's usually a big question.
Are we supposed to be, answering some of them that you
said? No, these are just some questions that come up that we can discuss if you don't really have a question, but I hope you have a question. Choosing and managing the people that are sharing, okay? That's a big one, right? How do we do that without being an asshole? Okay. Managing crosstalk. Managing side talk. There is a difference. Crosstalk is where Kelly shares with me in the group an issue that he's having, and then somebody responds to Kelly on what the solution is and gives him some nice therapeutic advice in front of the whole meeting. Okay. Now, side talk is huge. I think it's the most disruptive part of a meeting. I think it's, I just think it's horrible. So I think it's disrespectful. But how do we control that, And then, of course, any questions that you come up with that aren't on my list that we can talk about and share about. We can always have some ABC topics below that subtopic if it's something that on your question that we turn in, because these are your questions. This is your workshop, And you come here for an answer to something, I believe. And, I think that the power of the group is what comes in recovery in meetings of Cocaine Anonymous. And I think the power of the group for this meeting leading workshop is where we'll come up with the solutions. So if you have a question, I'm going to ask somebody to come up here and share their experience or belief system or how to handle it. And then you can take notes. You can just tear off that little part of the question on your paper. Then you can take notes, or you can just take it into your psyche and put it wherever it belongs in that compartment for what did I learn today. And it'll probably last an hour and 45 minutes. We'll take a break for cigarettes and pee breaks and pizza or anything else that's going along, donuts. And, of course, anything else that we determine is important. Okay? Everybody knows the format? Okay, good. Okay, so I have Tina taking notes, bullet points, and we'll turn those into the conference. Okay, and so we'll start first. Who has a question? And raise your hand and tell me the question, and then we will ask people to come up and share their experience with that and what we can do to solve the question and give you a solution. Sound fair? Frozen. Okay.
So my question is...
Hey, right up here. Right up here.
Hey!
Come right up here. Come up here with me.
All right. It is good. So my name is Jeff, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Jeff.
My question is to be able to look at the group as a meeting leader, and it be my home group to call on people that I know that's been in recovery for a while first, and then the newcomer after I do that.
That's your question?
What should the newcomer come first, or should the people that been around for a while?
Excellent question.
You know, man.
Okay. Who's got some experience with that? Come on up here, Andrew. Sit right here beside Jeff. Tape's running. You got to hurry. Tape's expensive. Can you pick that up, Master Mike? Okay. All right, Andrew.
All right, I'm Andrew. I'm a drug addict.
Hi, Andrew. Speak loud.
So, I've been leading the meeting for a little while now, and like my meetings would always get chaotic if I just, after the topic I shared, I just opened it up. So somebody taught me when after you share and you drive the topic in, you drive the topic in with experience. So what I always normally do, it's either three people or 15 to 16 minutes. I pick on the three people with the most sobriety in the room. That way, the newcomers have a path to follow. You know, and that's what keeps, you know, that's what's always kept my meeting strong. You know, so sometimes it'd be four people. But I try to leave enough time for everybody else to be able to follow. And I have found the problem is when you immediately open up the meeting, we could be talking about, like, music, something that's not the solution, something that's not even on the topic. And I've found that a lot, and especially if you got, like, a bigger meeting, if you got, I don't know what's big to you guys, if you got anywhere above 25 people and you let the meeting immediately get out of hand, it will go this way, and then trying to bring it back to the middle is, like, really hard to do.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right, who else? Who else has something? Come on up here. Identify yourself. Get in close so we can hear it for the world.
Come on over here.
Yeah. Y'all come on over here. Come on, we can get closer. Let's pick him. Let's pick him up.
Okay.
How's this? Is that good, Mastermind? Okay.
I'm Jason. I'm an addict.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jason.
Kind of similar to Andrew. What I've done typically in the past is when I open a meeting, I pick on a few people that I know have a strong message, and I try to sprinkle in some people that maybe we don't hear from, that don't necessarily talk a little bit. But the key thing that I like to do that my sponsor taught me is that the last person I pick on, I like to. That be maybe one of my more experienced people, so they can kind of maybe clean up some things if necessary, and just, you know, kind of tie the meeting up. That seems to work really well.
Good stuff. All right.
Thanks, Jason.
Okay. Who else? This is a pretty strong. This is a pretty strong topic for the.
Hey,
here come Marty.
My name's Martin. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and drug addict.
Hey, Marty.
Got him. Switch it up. Kind of like what was been echoed. I usually get done and I share. Then I'll pick on a couple people that have some good time, and then I try to hit the people who are picked up a milestone. So some of you got their 30, 60, 90. They kind of back and forth a little bit, mix it up between. But I always like to have a closer. like Jason said, I usually try to save the best for last if I'm going to pick on somebody. But sometimes the meeting, there's too many people, and then you kind of run out of time. You don't get. But I think that the people, if they leave with the last person to share has a good message, then that, I think that sticks with them. And it does for me. So that's just how I treat everybody else, because that's what works for me.
Great. All right. Thanks. So, solution?
The solution is, it could be, you could carry the message first. You carry the message first, which that's what the meeting is designed for, the message, the reading. And you can carry the message throughout the meeting first, or you can have people talk, and at the end, they end with the closing and cover up the meeting.
Good.
You know what I mean?
I got something to say.
Well, come on. We can hear your heels. we can hear your heels. Okay.
Yeah. I'm Colby.
Hey, Colby.
Hello.
Hi, Colby.
Alcoholic and an addict. And we're from Arizona. And we chair a Tuesday big book study. And I kind of do like you did in the beginning. I control the room. So I don't necessarily move their seats, but as the meeting's going to start, about 10-15 minutes before, I walk through the aisles, I demand attention, I make eye contact, I let everybody know that they're going to be picked on, everybody is subject to be picked on, so don't not pay attention, because I'm going to call you out. I don't really control the meeting, like who's going to speak and when it's going to, who's going to say what. I kind of let God do that. And we are reading from the big book, and I do let everybody know that we're going to read from the big book, and feel free to raise your hand if you have something to say, if there's something that you've learned, something that's written in your book that we should all hear. You don't have to wait till the end of the paragraph. Let it in. And then there's a guy named Rich that always comes, and he has 20 years, and I do make that be known, that Rich is like a beacon, and he has a lot of good stuff to say. And then I tell people, too, if we're reading and you have no idea what's going on, raise your hand for that, too, because there's nothing worse than sitting in a room and having no idea what's going on, like 15 minutes ago, and then you're just doing this because you're lost. So I kind of let it be an open forum. I don't, like, gear it for, like, who speaks first and, like, newcomer first, and because our meetings are pretty big. 40 is usually, like, for that big book study where we sit at. So I just kind of let God do his or her thing. I kind of let, and if somebody shares and it goes off topic, I reel them back in. Like, is that what we just read? Is that what we're talking about? And then I will kind of clean it up. But we just kind of let everybody do their thing and let God lead.
Outstanding.
Yeah. For sure.
Outstanding. Yeah. Thank you, Colby. All right. Okay, we got another one.
Hey.
That's my dad.
Dad, that's
how you
Dad.
Doing? My name is Pete.
Hey, Pete,
how you doing, Pete?
I'm an alcoholic. I'm also a wicked drug addict.
Okay. Get in here.
I've never heard that.
Wicked.
So
too.
In Rhode Island, we do a little different. If somebody's anniversary, they go up in chair, and we hand them a format sheet, and all they got to do is read it. And it tells them exactly how the meeting is. You could be from out of town. It doesn't matter. You're going to sit up there. You're going to share your experience, strength, and hope. Tell your story for 15 minutes. And then we sell raffle tickets, too. So we sell raffle tickets that you win a book. And the thing about the raffle tickets is the newcomer always wins the raffle. I've been here for 20 years, and it's happened every time.
Damn, that's neat.
Non-fail. And it's not rigged. It's just, that's just God working. We also have a chip system, so you know, 1, 2, and 3, they can come up and get a chip if they have that. And then, so the speaker chairs, and then he, a show of hands, and then whoever raises their hand, he could pick a topic, or he can just leave it open and see where the meeting goes. So they, people share on that, and then after the break, we do the chips, and then it, the last 10 minutes of the meeting, we also ask if anybody's new or coming back. So the last 10 minutes of the meeting is dedicated to the anybody who got a chip, anybody who's new or coming back, or anybody who hasn't shared yet. It's kind of like the shy people that won't, don't want to raise their hand and give them an opportunity to share. And it works fairly well. You know, having a topic is a lot better, but sometimes not having a topic, it kind of opens up doors that, you know, might not have opened if you pick, because, you know, most people just pick gratitude, or it always ends up kind of being the same topic. So it's nice to let it be more open. So, but that's how we do it.
Outstanding. Outstanding. We appreciate the input. Thank you. So we got some different takes on Jeff's question, you know, and that's what this workshop's for. I mean, that went exactly the way that it should go. All right, Jeff, thank you. Who has a question? No questions. Who has a question? Okay. Come on up here. Oh yeah, this is taped for eternity.
All right, so my question is, in a meeting, you know, when you've only got so much time and you got a lot of people and you get somebody that wants to share for 25 minutes and basically chair the meeting, what's a good way to address that? And so that they, you know, everybody keeps it to five, even though you announce in the beginning that everybody is to keep their chair to 5 minutes, and then you know, let it go to six or seven, and then you got people who just basically take the meeting hostage, and you know, what's a good way to curb that?
Great question. I don't think anybody's ever experienced that.
There's a group called On and On and
the
On.
The Bogarts. So you know, I call them Bogarts, you know. It's an old term from 1974. But, you know, they Bogart the meeting. Pretty much they just Bogart the meeting. So who has, who's dealt with that? How did you deal with it? It's a great question. And who wants to share on it? Come on. You're going to have to get close here. You know, we're all, like, together. We're probably, we may be super spreaders. Yeah. But
my name is Boo, and I'm an addict. So the way that, you know, I try to deal with that is my phone is my best friend, pretty much. So at some point, if he's, like, over the time limit, just set your alarm. Like, Siri set me a five-second alarm. And in 5 seconds, beep, 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 beep. And then they hear that, and maybe that gets them into, like, oh, my God, I've been talking for this long. You know what I mean? I should shut up. Or maybe you say, all right, time's up. So that's how I look at it.
Good deal. That's a solution. Who else? Nobody's had this problem leading a meeting? All the time. So how do we handle it? How do we handle it?
All right, Kelly.
Come on, set us straight.
Oh, my name's Kelly. I'm an addict.
Lean into the phallic device. Okay.
No. So I haven't dealt with this in a while where I've actually actively stopped it during a meeting, but years ago at our old hall, you had some people that would get in and they'd just go. And what I found, because we don't do well with subtle hints, it seems, we don't do well with minor hints like the meeting leader looking at you and just kind of looking away like, what the fuck are you talking about? What I've found that usually works pretty well is most people, when they're sharing and they're going on and on, there's going to be moments where they stop because they're thinking of more shit to say. And that's the moment that I've done it a couple times, and I honestly haven't had to do it that often because I don't like to. Probably times where I should have, but I hadn't. But it's honestly the best way to say, hey, there's a lot of people in this room. I'm sure other people would like to share, appreciate what you have to say, but can you shut it down and allow other people to share? You know, you said a lot of good stuff. I don't think it would be effective to say, hey, you need to, you know, shut the hell up because there's other people, but I don't think there's anything wrong with complimenting somebody, trying to do it as kindly as possible. Say, you know, appreciate what you got to say. You shared a lot of good stuff. Let's give some other people an opportunity to talk. And that's about the only way I know to do it because there really isn't a there's never been a good way to interrupt somebody when they're sharing in a meeting. Usually they get mad and get their feelings hurt, and that's just usually how it is. But sometimes that's your responsibility as a meeting leader to make sure that other people get to share. So that's
very good. Very good. Thanks, Kelly. Who else? Who else has some experience with the Bogarts? Nobody?
I go to one meeting and we have a they had a timer. 5 minute timer.
Come home, Drew.
If you'll notice that a lot of this is still coming back to the control of the meeting. Mm-hmm. The control of the meeting.
I'm not going to get too far into this.
So,
I mean, this actually happens a lot. And, you know, what I find is either they're going to be offended or they're not going to be offended. It doesn't matter. It's just depending on how their day. But, like, if it's going too long, like, if they're in a deep share and it's, like, really good and it's healthy and people are paying attention, I normally let it go. But I tell you, I had this guy one time. We got 3.5 minutes into it, and we always do 3 to 5 at RIP. So we got 3.5 minutes into it, and he talked about every 60s band, 70s band to this point. And I finally just spoke over him, said, thank you. And he got really offended. You know, and there's nothing that I can do about people being offended. I'm fine with it, you know, be fucking mad at me. But I find, I'm being serious. I mean, what are you supposed to do, you know? But so I find, when you just say, thank you, we appreciate what you shared, regardless of where they're at or if they're a little pause or a little break, sometimes you got to be quick. We've had to do this quite a few times, you know. They're going to look at you, and then they're going to have this, like, they'll have this look of, fuck, I've been sharing too long, you know. But I always tell them, thank you, we appreciate you sharing, we need to move forward. I mean, I don't, like, I've never stopped, hey, look, stop, shut the fuck up. You know, and it all boils down to how you're willing to approach your whole meeting from the front to back. If you engage your meeting, you know, and if you engage the people that go there before your meeting starts, like stopping and talking to them and you just telling them thank you, you know, they're going to be a lot less offended. But if they walk in and you're unapproachable or unacceptable, sometimes stopping your meeting can get a lot harder, or stopping someone sharing a lot harder. It's more offensive, you know? And I've had to cut off some people I've known a long time, and they don't get mad, but I engage them all the time, you know? I engage people before my meeting. I engage people after the meeting. And that's, like, really important that we remember to do this, and it all boils down to controlling the meeting. It's not the hour. It's the 30 minutes before and the 30 minutes after how you get to know everybody there. And then I normally will go and talk to them after the meeting. Hey, look, man, I'm not trying to be rude, but there's 40, 50, 60 other people in here that might need to share. Yeah, I know, I just, you know, I get loose sometimes, you know, and it's okay, you know. I got to be mindful as the meeting leader that I don't overshare, you know. Like, we start at 7:30, and if it's 8 o'clock by the time I get done sharing, I feel like I've shared too long. That's the truth. Like, I need to be done with everything in the first 15 to 20 minutes. Call my 3 people by 8. And I like to pass my best by 8:05. That way, so I don't have to stop most people from sharing. If I overshare too, then I'm letting the whole meeting overshare. You know, and that's not fair to anybody in there because I'm not doing a good job.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Thanks, Andrew. Anybody else? Nobody else has anything on the Bogarts? Okay, thank you.
All right.
We appreciate your question. All right, next question. Let's go. Somebody's got a question. No one has a question at all. And no hands up. Everybody got all the information
maybe.
They need.
Maybe I
have. Okay, well, we're going to have a, we got a maybe.
Jason, I'm an addict.
Hey, Jay.
Hey,
Jim. So, what do we do to keep, I'm trying to word this correctly, but keep our members engaged with the meeting you know, coming back as they gain sobriety, advance in years, they start getting some of their life back a little bit. How do we keep them engaged in the meeting, in the fellowship, in the hall? I don't know if that's a meeting leader question so much, but.
Well, I think that's probably a group question. And I think it all starts, as like Andrew was talking about, the entrance to the meeting and what did we do 30 minutes before and what do we do 30 minutes after. I think that kind of got addressed with people coming back to your hall. And what did the, you know, I mean, how many people, you know, does your hall surround the newcomer when they're walking out and talk to them and say, hey, I'd like you to come back and, you know, anything I can do, here's my phone number. I think that's the biggest point is people go where they feel the most. The biggest term I hear is I'll feel comfortable there, okay? And I think making people feel comfortable is a huge, huge deal for us, you know? I think the beginning is the, you know, when you walk in, it's first impressions are everything, right? It's everything in life, you know? What did they feel when they come in there? Did they feel, you know, there's a deal that I call the sense of the meeting. And, you know, if you're familiar with the concepts, the sense of the meeting is critical, you know. Is the meeting there for the newcomer? Is the meeting there for whatever other reason there could be that the meeting has taken on? Meetings take on personality. Anybody disagree? The different meetings take on different personalities and take on a kind of a, you know, an ambience of their own and how it's done. But, you know, how do we get them back and how do we get them to stay, I think has been the biggest question for 80 years, you know. So I really don't have a solution. Anybody got an answer on that, on how we get them to stay and so, stay engaged?
So I think his question is...
You want to come up here?
Well, I don't, no. I think I understand your question. The question is, how do you get people that have been sober for a while and got their life back to continue to come back to meetings rather than backing off meetings because they have life?
Is that your question?
Essentially, yes. I mean, yeah, basically that's it.
And that's a tough question. And I don't know that there is an answer. I was guilty. I was around Rip for the first 7 years that I got sober. And was heavily involved with the group. What happened was I met a woman and got married and started living a life worth living. That's what happened. The takeaway from that was not going to meetings anymore. Going to very few meetings. Enjoying my life. And losing sight of how I got my life. And I think that's where, whether it's on sponsors or whether it's on the responsibility of the people who got this gift to continue to come back and share, to continue to bring your life into that hall. And that's what I've tried to do. I got chastised by a very important person to me that's known me longer than anybody. She's been sober now for 30 years. And what she told me was, you have this life because of a program that you started and made part of your life. To not go back. Because my world went to shit, amazingly enough. But I didn't get loaded. But to come back and share that, that's hard for me sometimes. It means because I don't struggle with wanting to use pill. I don't struggle with wanting to drink. I struggle with just trying to find different ways to destroy my life. I struggle with wanting to just remove myself from people and their lives and not be a part of that. And that's the part that I'm concerned with, and even watching in my home group, is people get their life back and lose sight of how they got their life back and don't bring that to share. How you deal with the daily struggles of life, not necessarily using, but just life. And I don't know that there is an answer. I know why I came back. I know why I started spending more time in meeting halls. I know why I started trying to share and get involved and do things, because I want the new people to see that it's possible to live a good life and still be active in CA or in AA or, you know, and come to meetings and lead them. I think it's important, and I always worry about that. I worry about that now. Is life getting good and deciding, ah, fuck, I don't need to go to meetings, doesn't mean you're going to get loaded, but your life may not stay good. You know, and I don't know that there's a good way to do that. I don't know the answer. Other than guilt. You feel guilty for not doing what you're supposed to do.
You know, that's a tough question, man. I mean, it really is. It's a good question. But, you know, I mean,
I think
a home group sense and because, see, I mean, myself, my own experience is I'm a desperate addict. And I've never left. And, you know, I've been real fortunate in that sense that I've always just been able to at least hang on to the coattails of some guys I sponsor or some guys that I don't sponsor that sponsor me in somehow short, you know, form or fashion that I hang on to their shirt tails when I've wanted to get away. And, you know, I don't know. You know, I really don't have an answer. Anybody got an answer to that question? Come on up, Troy. Thank you, Jason.
No problem.
Appreciate it.
No, sit there so you can talk into the mic.
My name Jason took control of the meeting.
My name's Troy. I'm an addict.
The
question I think was how do we retain our older members, and I think it comes back to the topic at hand is meeting leaders, and this is a question wrapped up in an answer is how do we select appropriate meeting leaders? What makes a good meeting leader? You know, I know a little bit, man, so I'll probably mess it up, but trying to act like I'm intelligent. But I know it's one of the concepts says something about picking the most well qualified person for that service position, right? We just don't throw somebody in as a meeting leader that's got 90 days clean because we like them and they're our friend. How effective a meeting leader are they going to be? Are they grounded in the steps? Because our fifth tradition states that we have one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, not the mess. And, you know, not all, whatever it is. If we're doing that and we're sponsoring people, you know, you get, for me, I don't, like Kelly, I don't struggle with wanting to use dope or drink whiskey, but it's just living life on life's terms. But I have a responsibility to those that came before me to carry the messages of those that come after me, right? And so when I go to meetings, I'm not there because I need a fix or because I'm having a bad day. I got friends or people I can talk to about that, right? I go there to carry a message to honor the fifth tradition. And I think that what happens is I see happening is that we get away from that and we start getting into our little groups and our cliques and everything else. And we lose focus of what our primary purpose is as meeting leaders. And that is to carry the message. And so if the group is, in my opinion, if they're selecting strong meeting leaders that are well qualified to lead a meeting, and that means that they know about sponsorship. They're either sponsors or they're being sponsored by somebody. And engaging the newcomer in sponsorship and then bringing them in to sponsor people and then so on and so forth and creating that family chain, I think keeps people more engaged in a group without having them go elsewhere. You know what I mean? It's a different culture that you got to kind of create versus we got 5 years clean, so we're going to go hang out over here at this other group and da 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 whatever. Now let's keep working with the newcomer because that's the most important thing. That's why we're here, right? That's my answer.
Thanks, Troy.
Thanks to you.
All right. Satisfied? All right. Well, Jason got an answer to his question. That's important. Okay, another question. We got to have another question. Okay, I'm fixing to take up your papers and see what you wrote down. So, huh? Do what?
Why are we talking about the question that you asked?
What's that? How do we keep, that's another question, how we keep the newcomer engaged, right? Is that the question?
That's the question you had, that 5 years.
Well, you know, with the meeting leader workshop, you know, that comes back to a lot of different things. How do we keep the newcomer engaged? And that's Andrew's question, right?
As a meeting. Your question. I just figured we should all answer it.
Right. As a meeting leader.
As a group as a whole. Because I
believe I don't know what they're talking about. I really don't. That's kind of a group question.
I have a question.
Okay. Yeah, come on up. Andrew's fixing. Andrew's got his question.
I thought this was your question.
What was my question?
How do we keep newcomers engaged? Isn't this what he said before?
I think it was the people that came around.
Yeah, that was the question. How do we keep the old timers coming back to the meeting?
Okay, so how do we keep newcomers engaged in meetings?
Okay, great. That's sit
really
down,
didn't
Andrew.
I want to ask a question. I wanted to answer the fucking question, but.
Well, then speak. How do we get my question? Okay, wait. Deborah's coming up. Okay, here we're kind of getting luck. Okay, we're that's really a good question. How does the meeting leader keep the newcomer engaged?
Sorry.
Is the question.
Hi, my name is Deborah, and I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hi, Deborah.
And I'm going to speak from experience when I was a newcomer, still a newcomer, but when I was really a newcomer, and I came in, and I had been around before. But what really kept me coming back was, it wasn't, I think I had one or two people that really came up to me, but not a lot. But I wanted this. I was so willing to come in. But I would hear people when they share their experience. I love the Big Book. It's a great tool. But for me, I wasn't in a place to be able to hear a Big Book message. I needed to hear somebody's experience. I needed to know that this person understood, because, I thought I was really special and that nobody understood me and that my life wasn't like hers. And so when I hear somebody's experience from the heart, then that makes me identify with them and makes me, and then I start to see them before and after the meeting being engaged with the newcomer, coming up and seeing somebody that's never been there or paying attention during the meeting and seeing their facial expressions and their body language and being aware and then making sure to go up to them afterwards. But I think it's, for me, I wanted to know that you guys were like me and that I really wasn't that special and I needed to hear some personal experience in those Big Book messages. So
great. Well, thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Anybody? Come on.
Come on, MJ.
I'll speak as this all being brand new to me just in the last couple months.
Okay, let's sit down and lean in, MJ.
Okay, what's helped me keep coming back as a real newcomer, brand new to any of this, like trying to be sober, trying to have a good life, trying to reconnect with my family, things like that, like, I'll just start off with Anthony. Like, every time I go to the meeting, he calls on me, Kelly's showing up prior to the meetings, staying afterwards to directly ask how we're doing. Jeff's showing up even when he's busy and got to work and ain't running the meeting. With Andrew, it's every time he speaks, he talks about the purpose not being just, it's all hunky-dory and roses and this and that we've got to step in the door and we've got it figured out, that we need to always keep it in the forefront of our mind, that we, even as newcomers, are there for the next person also.
Amen.
And I love that every time he speaks, he says that, and that not only encourages us to keep coming back, but it shows us the true purpose of what it is, and it shows us that it does work, so as we're going through it, and actually experiencing it ourselves, it's also instilling the true purpose, which is to help the next person, not just ourselves. So, from, like you said, just being comfortable there. Like, I've spoke on meetings about, I've played with my niece up there and have her running around and on my phone here and there and everything. I've told them it's not because I'm not paying attention. It's not because I'm not engaged. It's because I am that comfortable there, that this is where I feel comfortable being myself, And, it's just multiple facets of it. So, as leaders, every one of you has a different personality, too, just like everybody in the room has a different personality. But a common thing is, like you said, engaging with us before the meeting, engaging with us after the meeting. Like, there's been times that I've showed up late, straight from work, and dirty and dusty and not, like, my normal routine. And I've had guys directly pull me up and be like, hey, what's going on, you know? So they're that aware of the person on how they look, how they dress, what's going on with them, the tone of their voice. If they're, like I said with Anthony, you know, if you see somebody that's not really trying to speak but shows up a lot, call them. You know, because they do want to share, but sometimes it takes that extra little push, you know, not being overbearing or nothing, but that extra push just to get them to open up and say something. And then after they've done that once or twice, now they feel comfortable also. So, I mean, that's just a few things for me.
Thanks. Well, thank you, MJ.
Thank you, MJ.
Appreciate it.
I thank all of you. Really.
Yeah. So.
Hold on. We got more.
We got more? Okay. Come on up here.
East Coast is going to tell you how to do it.
Wicked. Okay. Wicked. I just want to know where you parked your car. Okay.
I parked in the parking lot.
Oh, he's in the parking lot. Okay.
When I first got sober, I got a sponsor. I think I was 3 months sober. And he said, what meetings you go to? And I told him. He says, all right, Tuesday night meeting. Who's making coffee there? I said, I don't know. He said, I think John is. He said, I want you to go in and tell John that you're the new coffee maker. And I said, what? He said, yep, just go in and say I'm the new coffee maker. And I went in there and I said, John, I'm the new coffee maker. He said, what the hell have you been? Gave me a key. He said, be here at 7 o'clock. Here's where everything is. And that was it. I was the new coffee maker. So I had to go to that meeting to make the coffee. I had a car, you know, so I could get around. But I think service is the key to get the newcomer. I'm talking, you know, 3 months. I don't give them, you know, service positions like GSR or anything like that. But we got, I was Peter the Greeter, one group. This is Peter the Greeter. So I go in there, I told them my name, I asked them their name, I said welcome. That was my whole job. I did that to everybody that came in. We got people setting up coffee. I can have 20 people setting up coffee. You count the napkins. Here, you do this. After the meeting, you clean up. It gets them there early. It makes them stay late. It gives them purpose. A lot of these people don't have jobs because they've lost their jobs. They've lost their houses. They're living in on the streets sometimes. Gives them a place to go. Give them something to do. And you watch them come alive. You watch them just, you know, and it gives other. The reason we have meetings, okay, is not for camaraderie. It's not to get sober. It's not to get clean. It's for people to come to find other people that have found the solution and to get that solution taught to them. That's why we have meetings. People come, you know, they're like, I got sober and, you know, I go to 10 meetings a day. I'm like, that's great. But, you know, unless you're doing the work in the meetings, just sitting there listening to other people talk is helpful, but it's not going to give you the solution. So they're going to meet people who have the solution that can say, hey, do you got, you know, some time tomorrow we can talk about this? And that's how this thing works. You know, that's how this thing works is passing it on and bringing people through the work. You know, I know for the first 5 years, you know, I was kind of like reminded me, you know, I was white knuckling it because I refused. I did all the service. I kept coming back, but I wasn't getting the answers because I wasn't doing the work. And I was going to a lot of meetings, but they weren't giving me what I needed. So that's my take on it.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Can I share?
Huh?
Can I go?
Sure.
So at RIP, and actually a buddy of mine, so about a year ago, I wanted to start a men's meeting there, and it's still going today. And, you know, the big problem that we had, and, you know, it's like, so how do we get people to stay connected, not just inside the meeting, but outside the meeting? Because a lot of people want to sit here and they see us laughing and they want to laugh with us. They want to smile with us, you know? And so it's kind of like the technology part of it, man, outside of the meeting halls is how we're staying connected. You know, we got this mandatory chat for the men's meeting for guys who come here. And, you know, it's there for each other to help, man, but it's there to show everybody that we can start smiling and laughing again. You know, I think a lot of the things that we have lacked in the past is connection. And it's not connection to one person, I figured out. It's like now with these young kids, they need to be connected. it takes like five people to sponsor some of these people at the same time. Like, we all sponsor each other. We all love each other. We all help each other. I see probably 80% of this room 4 or 5 days out of the week. You know, that's like huge. That's because we engage, and we engage in the newcomers. We engage in the 2 days, the 3 days, the 1 day. We find them housing. We go the extra mile. Like, are we willing to go the extra mile? I remember my parents have been sober for 35, 36 years. And I remember coming home and my dad having an alcoholic stain with us, a new one, every fucking 3 months. Well, who's this? Well, he's trying to sober up. He's going to work for us for a while. Great. But I've learned so much character from them guys. Like, I got stories and stories and stories and friendships and people I've met, and, you know. And this is what I remember, and this is what I've seen, and this is how I've seen it work. And this is how we've engaged a lot of people in our community at our home group, you know. And I can only speak from my experience. Especially with these young kids that are, like, struggling, we try to... I wouldn't say box them in, but we're all on them and always talking to them, helping them find sponsorship if they're not wanting us to sponsor them. Because I can be a fucking dickhead and a tyrant. I ain't going to lie. Kidding. I'm very tolerant of a lot of things because I'm best friends with Jeff. No, but it's the truth, though, man, is we found a way to connect with a lot of people outside the group, and we don't wait until they come to the group. And I think that's a huge important thing for a lot of the guys that we have, is we've kept them all connected, you know. And that goes from whether you're in Oxford House, Big Fish, if you're not in the house, if you're trying to stay sober, if you want friends. You know, some of these people just need to know that they're not only wanted in the hall, but a lot of these people want to be wanted outside the hall. And, like, we have to remember that. Like, who are we to exclude anybody from our lives, inside or outside the hall, for taking this program seriously? And I find that to be, like, super true, you know, like, with new people. They need to see the examples, like, not just for me. I had to see the example inside the hall and outside the hall. I had to learn how to become a man in every part of my life, you know, and I got to remember that everybody else probably needs the same thing, you know. That's all I got.
All right, thanks, guy. Appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Questions on meeting leaders. Jason is a question guy. Y'all don't have questions. I'm going to take up your papers. All right, get up here, Jason. You have your papers.
I have one more question.
What is your question? Question paper. Y'all hide your papers.
Okay, Jason, I'm an addict. How do we pick our topic before the meeting, and more importantly, how do we not pick our topics?
Great question! How many of you go to a meeting where the guy person goes, well, I'm not really prepared for this meeting, cause I'm gonna,
yeah.
So I opened up Quiet Peace, and I'm going to read this.
Mm-hmm.
How you feel about that?
Not a big
sloppy. Fan. Sloppy's a good kind word. How you feel about that when the meeting leader opens the meeting with, "I got so much going on that I just got here and I just magically opened the big book and I came to it's page 69 and now we're going to talk about sex." How many of you, nobody's ever experienced that?
It's disrespectful to the rest of the group.
Oh, Troy said disrespectful to the rest of the group. An opinion, another opinion, please. Come on.
It just already sets the meeting tone.
It already sets the meeting's tone. Disrespectful already sets the meeting's tone. Well, okay, all I could tell you about that is my experience with being a meeting leader, okay? And it came from my sponsorship, okay? Everything that I am and probably everything that I will be is probably the men that took me in the first 5 years of my recovery and sponsored me. They didn't tell me how to live my life. You know, I heard a lot of read the bottom of page 86, and I hung up the phone. This was past. This was before the point. I've been sober since the middle of March 1989, so this is before cell phones and social media and all the technology and Zoom meetings, and which I think are lazy, made us lazy in recovery. I can't stand them. I wish they'd go away. But, you know, I was talking about this last night with a couple of friends. But, you know, the biggest deal is I had sponsorship that led me in leading meetings and what I should be doing and how I should be doing it. And the first things they told me was, you walk in the meeting, is the meeting clean? Or the ashtrays clean? We used to have ashtrays. Okay. You know, is the meeting hall presentable? Does it need vacuumed? Is there toilet paper? Is there hand towels? I mean, that's the basics of leading a meeting. You know, are you there on time? 30 minutes before the meeting is our rule at my home group. You should be there. If you got a meeting at 7:30, you should be there and aware and ready to receive people at 7 o'clock. And that doesn't mean that you get there at 7. That means you might need to get there at a quarter till 7 to make sure that your meeting hall is presentable. And the next thing is, you know, that I was taught, I'm going to pass this book around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's in this book. You're welcome to look at it. But I had some strong sponsorship, and you know, the sponsor that took me through the steps in the beginning. We had a study sponsorship group. There was five or six or eight of us guys, and he would tell us to go to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and find out how many times the word God is in the first 164 pages. And I'll see y'all in 2 weeks. And we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have the internet, and we couldn't Google it. So we had to talk about it and read about it and study it. And what we came up with was this index after 3.5 years, from 1989 to 1993, we met, and I'll pass this around, and we used this after my fourth year of sobriety, after April of 1993, when Cecil passed away, and it was meeting topics. We turned into a book of meeting topics. We could tell you where the word divorce was in the big book. We could tell you where the word bum was in the big book. We could tell you where. So if you needed a meeting topic, now this, some of this is second edition and third edition books, but it'll give you a general area of where to look for your topics. And I think if you come to a meeting and you're not prepared as a meeting leader, you know, what are we doing? What are we doing? Where is your head at? You know, and I'm not going to meeting leader shame you, but I'm going to tell you shame on you as a meeting leader. Because you got, you know, there's a huge, huge responsibility, and it should be a privilege to lead a meeting of Cocaine Anonymous. You know, you're not the big shot. You're not the one with all the answers. I hope to God that you're leading a meeting because you're desperate for recovery in Cocaine Anonymous and realize that this is a huge part of service. I mean, I got old-timers in here, and remember when I went from emptying the trash in the ashtrays until one time the steering committee said, hey, would you like to lead the Tuesday step study? And how I approached that was with my sponsor. I said, how do I do this? Well, they got the format. Just read the format. That's not what he told me. He said, we need to talk about that every week. We need to talk to about it, start talking about it about 3 days before your meeting so that you're prepared. Because it's a privilege. And you may have some newcomers. Because I got written in my book. I found it a while ago. Here it is. It says, it shares my experience, strength. And this is on page 100, which Cecil called the power page. I put, share my, I don't know why he had me write this out here beside, if you have been successful in solving your own domestic problems, tell the newcomer's family how that was accomplished, and this way you can set them on the right track without becoming critical of them. And I've got written out there, share my experience and strength and not my opinions, which is a huge part of being a meeting leader on that topic. There's all kinds of indexes to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We sent this little jewel in that we wrote up, and we sent it to GSO. And, you know, we printed it in a real nice copy, and we stapled it with some real big staples and put some glue on the end. Oh, it looked good. That was a good-looking son of a bitch. And we sent it to GSO, and they sent a letter back. They kept it, but they sent a letter back and said, you know, we are just, you know, and there was 10 men involved in it. We are just impressed by the level of work put into this. But we believe that it's in the search. So, picking a topic, that's my take on that. It's the most important thing that you can do as a meeting leader. And have something to share on it. Whether it's your own domestic problems or if it's your own problems of solving all the problems that we have because we are problem people. Who else? Anybody got an answer for Jay? Happy?
Yeah.
All right. Any more questions? What time is it? Break time? Y'all need a break? All right. Well, it's 11 o'clock. We'll probably go. What's the next activity? Anybody know? Okay, well, we'll probably go just, we'll probably just go another 15 minutes and wrap it up. For any questions that you can think about for about the five-minute break to go smoke and pee, and then we'll go another 15 minutes to wrap up for questions, and then we'll end the workshop. Everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Need an air conditioner in here, don't we?